The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. A little more on the pop culture side today as we continue our adventure into the year 2023. Now, for me, the turning of a new year is always interesting for a lot of reasons. One of them is my birthday is in December, so I turn another year older at the end of one year, but mostly experiencing being that year older the following year. I just had a birthday on December the 3rd. Now it's January. So for all intents and purposes, this new year for me is a new age and a new year older. On the other hand, it's kind of interesting because even though, based on what I just said, you'd think that I, of all people, would think of January as the beginning of the new year. Well, all of us, January is the beginning of the new year, but I, of all people, who just turned a year older. Actually, growing up, I never thought of January as the new year. I thought of it as the middle of the year. Now, I wasn't dumb. I knew what January was. I knew what December was. I understood the calendar. I understood the date. I'm talking about those of us who grew up in the public school system. I always thought of fall as the beginning of the new year because that's when the new school year began. September or October. Yes, the brand spanking new school year where everything was fresh and vital and exciting. New classes, new rooms, new students, new friends, new clothes, new textbooks, new schedule. And it wasn't just school that was new. In those days, all the TV shows were brand new. New shows premiering or a second season of a show that you already loved, but you were watching summer repeats. That's somewhat true today, but it was much different back then. In those days, we didn't have 85,000 different channels on cable or channels that are streaming. Channels that you subscribe to, but half the time you never used and you don't even know what it is. You come home. What are you watching, sweetheart? Oh, I'm watching the drywall and stucco channel. But back in those days, we had three major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS. There was also public broadcasting, but whoever watched that? I mean, who are we kidding? But the three major networks, watching television was a hallmark of the baby boomers. Yes, I am of the baby boomer generation. We're a great big generation starting to die off like other generations before us. We come after World War II. They were known as the best generation. We're known as the worst generation. World War II was the generation of sacrifice, people that grew up during the Depression and then fought the Great War and freed the world from tyranny. But where do we get the name baby boomers? Well, when soldiers returned home from the war, they hadn't seen their wives for a long time, or they got married to their girlfriends anyway. Needless to say, a lot of sex, a lot of pregnancy, a lot of babies. There was a baby boom. And so we grew up as the baby boomers, and we were the first generation to grow up on television. It had already been invented, but we were that generation where a lot of households in the suburbs, many households now owned a television set. That is one of the distinctive features of the baby boomers. And yet, while we were watching television, there were always commercials about skincare and cream and youth and staying young. And so that leads to another characteristic of the baby boomers. We are the people that don't want to get old. And it's somewhat twofold. There's always variations. There's always exceptions. But in general, we are that generation that dreads getting old. And as a result, as a coping mechanism, we deny getting old. We like to act like we're young. We like to think we're young. We like to deceive ourselves into thinking we're young. Now, I'm a grandparent. I have several grandchildren. I love my grandkids. I love my grandkids. I love being a grandparent. It doesn't change any of that. But I gotta tell you, I often say to myself, wouldn't it be wonderful to be 20 again or 30 again? Now, I am wise enough to catch myself because, speaking of wise, I didn't have a lot of wisdom in those days. I would like to think that I learned a few things over the years. I am no longer in my 20s. I am no longer in my 30s. I'm way beyond that. In my 60s, as a matter of fact. And being that old, I've learned a few things. I've got years and years of experiences to draw upon. That is one of the advantages I'm seeing of getting older. When I was in my 20s and 30s, I didn't have years of experiences to draw upon. I had some. So I may miss the physique and the youth and the stamina and the strength, but I don't miss what a total jerk I was. I don't miss my arrogance. I'm in my 60s. I got to tell you, folks, I don't know nearly as much today as I knew when I was in college. Back then, I knew everything. Now, in a perfect world, if I could have my physique of a 20-year-old and the wisdom and knowledge and experiences of somebody in his 60s, well, I would just about be walking in heaven. The good news as Christians is someday we will be walking in heaven. We'll have a resurrected, beautiful body. We'll look like we did at our best, even better, and we'll never die again, and there will be no more age, and we'll all look like young adults, and yet we'll have all kinds of wisdom, and we'll learn more. But that's in heaven. Back down to earth, as the saying goes. Back to the idea of baby boomers not wanting to turn old as a general rule. It's sometimes called the Peter Pan syndrome. There are a lot of different definitions of that. It's not exactly clinical. Some people think it's clinical. But in the vernacular, it just means somebody who's emulating the story of Peter Pan. You remember the story of Peter Pan? A boy who didn't want to grow up. You remember the animated versions, the stage musicals. Actually, the original literature, the original children's literature of anything that we grew up on Disney to see, when you read it by the original author, and the original author of Peter Pan was J.M. Barrie, wrote it first as a play, later turned it into a novel. I'm telling you, children's literature is brilliant. That's somewhat true of any good literature. To read it in the author's original words, we're so used to the movies. And very seldom do the movies retain the true story. But even when they retain the true story, reading it in the author's original words, not just the dialogue, but the character's train of thought, with children's literature, children just follow the story. Adults look at it. They remember what it was like to be a kid. And the author is writing on two levels for the adult and the kids. Anyway, children's literature is absolutely brilliant. Peter Pan, the original Mary Poppins books, Tom Sawyer, The Wind in the Willows, Charlotte's Web. I could go on and on and on. But back to Peter Pan, that name got into the vernacular for people who just don't want to grow old. We have that song in some of the Peter Pan musicals. I don't want to grow up. I'll never, never grow up. There's a lot of different versions of it. So I mentioned baby boomers try to delude themselves into thinking they're not growing up. Let me give you an example. There's a very popular phrase that's been coined for a long time now. 60 is the new 40. Yeah, that sounds great. Well, it sounds great now. It sounded kind of stupid to me before I became 60. I wrote a play when I was in my 40s. And in that play, one of the characters said, "Who cares what happens to us after we turn 60? Now that I am 60, 70 and 80 and 90, well, that looks old, but 60 doesn't." And I like that phrase. 60 is the new 40. It actually became an extremely popular phrase, a common phrase. Why? Because it was invented by the baby boomers. Either in their 60s or approaching 60s, there's a wide range of decades that counts you as a baby boomer. And once again, we're baby boomers. There was a baby boom. That means there's a lot of us, so many. We find plenty of people to reinforce the illusion that we're young. And I loved it. Being in my 60s just wasn't all that bad. I thought of it as the new 40s. Well, here's the deal. I mentioned that I just had a birthday, and I mentioned that I'm in my 60s. What I didn't tell you is that in December of 2022, I turned 69. I now have less than a year before the big 7-0. And the older I get, and you know this, the older you get, the faster the years go by. I just turned 69, but if I accidentally stumble and blink, I'll find myself 70. And so, my friends, pay careful attention, and I'll explain exactly what this means. It means I have exactly one more year to work on my new slogan, but let me try it out now in the meantime. What do you say, folks? Is 70 the new 50? Hey, if a man can call himself a woman, if a woman can call herself a man, if a liberal can call a conservative African-American a white supremacist, then doggone it, I can be 50 when I turn 70. And why stop there? Okay, here's a better one. I am 69 going on 20. And if you don't agree, you're not woke. And if you don't agree, you're not sensitive. You're probably a 20-a-phobe. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Taking Bible questions, even controversial Bible questions, even disturbing Bible questions. We don't shy away from them. And today's passage you may find especially disturbing. In fact, I guarantee you will. I did the first time I saw it. I am going to read from a brief portion of Scripture. This is Jesus himself talking, part of his very first sermon, the sermon where he kicked off and launched his ministry. We refer to this as the Sermon on the Mount. As you will see, Jesus was not one to tell people only what they wanted to hear. He wasn't a politician making empty promises. He wasn't concerned about popularity or the numbers in his movement. In fact, he's putting all cards on the table right from the start, quite aware that many in the crowd might decide not to follow him as a result of what he's saying because he's not tickling their ears. Yes, this portion from the Sermon on the Mount, this brief passage of Scripture, is one of the least popular. Even Christians just wish it wasn't there because it says things about the possible future of their friends, their loved ones. I'm reading from Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Okay, this is an analogy. How about some background for the analogy? Cities in those days were surrounded often with walls, and the way of entry through those walls was a gate. Gates provided access to great roads that could easily accommodate a crowd. That is, some gates, the big gates, the public gates, but others were for more private purposes. They were narrow. They could only let a few in at a time. My friends, what Jesus is saying here is very grave. Most people are going to hell after they die. Not heaven, hell. There will be people in heaven, but more people will be in hell. That's not what we think today. In fact, some people believe everybody will be in heaven. There isn't even a hell. But amongst those who believe in hell, it's certainly more comforting to believe that more people will be in heaven. I know this sounds depressing. Let me put it in a little bit of context. Let me cheer you up as much as I can. That doesn't mean there won't be a lot of people in heaven. There'll be many people in heaven. There'll be millions upon billions in heaven. There will still be a lot. I don't know how many, but we do know there will be a lot. We know this from a vision that the Apostle John received of heaven, part of the book of Revelation. I'm reading now from Revelation 7, 9 through 10. After this, I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and in front of the Lamb. The Lamb is identified in Revelation as Jesus. This is a vision. They were wearing white robes and were holding palm branches in their hands, and they cried out in a loud voice, "Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb." So there are going to be many in heaven. Notice there's no number given. We're not told how many will be in heaven. We're not told how many will be in hell. But whatever the number, there'll be plenty in both places. More, however, will be in hell. Why is this? Well, there are two reasons given in the Scripture. One, human nature. And two, the human tendency to follow other men rather than following God. A couple of scriptures on the condition of man, Romans 3, 23 through 24. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Sin means selfishness. We've talked about this on other radio shows. Not self-esteem, but the kind of selfishness where we're putting ourselves first. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God and are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Jesus Christ. Now, as you see, salvation is offered to all. And it's offered free. We could be forgiven. Boy, with an offer like that, you'd think everybody would end up in heaven. They deserve hell. Everybody deserves hell. But you'd think everybody would end up in heaven, which is what God would prefer. But that's not what people are choosing. Meanwhile, more on human nature. Romans chapter 3, starting with verse 10. There is no one righteous, not even one. There is no one who understands, no one who seeks God. All have turned away and have together become worthless. There is no one who does good, not even one. Their throats are open graves. Their tongues practice deceit. The poison of vipers is on their lips. Their mouths are full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Ruin and misery mark their ways, and the way of peace they do not know. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Now we know that whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be silenced and the whole world held accountable to God. Therefore, no one will be declared righteous in his sight by observing the law. Rather, through the law, we become conscious of sin. So the road to God, the road to heaven, the road to forgiveness, salvation for all of eternity, is through Jesus Christ, his death on the cross for our sins, his resurrection from the dead. Why will most people not take God up on that offer? Well, human nature tends to follow the pack and follow the crowd rather than following God, even after God does incredible things. Look at the miracles God did, the plagues on Egypt, the parting of the Red Sea. He had just done all that stuff, but because Moses was taking more time on the mountain, 40 days and 40 nights, more time than they were comfortable with, they started thinking, well, maybe the God of Moses isn't God after all, and they built this golden calf, and I've said this before, they weren't thinking that they were building a God. They were thinking they were building a representation of some Egyptian god that existed in the heavens that looked like a calf. So they were dumb. They just weren't quite as dumb as we think. But they were dumb enough to be following this golden calf representation. And Moses came down, and only the Levites, only his own tribe, turned to him. There were 12 tribes. The majority was in the wrong. In fact, this is why the tribe of Levites were made the priests. Originally, the priests were going to be every firstborn son in Israel, no matter what tribe they were born in. But because the Levites were the only tribe that followed the true God, that all changed. Yes, human nature follows the crowd, and it wasn't just in the Old Testament. It was in the New Testament. On the day Jesus rode into Jerusalem, the day we frequently refer to as Palm Sunday, people were ecstatic. They were shouting, "Hosanna! Blessed is him who comes in the name of the Lord." Jesus had been the biggest thing for the last 3 years, and here he was in Jerusalem on the week of the Passover, and that same crowd 1 week later was shouting, "Crucify him!" Now, why? Because Jesus allowed himself to get arrested. They were expecting him to come in as a warrior and as a king. They weren't expecting a Messiah to die for their sins, although as we've proven in some of our shows about the Messiah, dying for their sins and rising from the dead was what the Messiah was supposed to do first. Many of their scribes had already understood that in the past, but in the present, they were looking for a warrior to beat the Romans. And with all the miracles Jesus had done, they were quite confused that he allowed himself to get arrested. But that's not the only reason. A lot of the people in the crowd were still feeling a loyalty to Jesus, but the religious rulers of the day, the Sadducees and the Pharisees, those were the priests, the corrupt priests, the corrupt teachers. Now, a lot of them later on gave their lives to Jesus, so we don't want to vilify them too much, but they were sure villains at this time, and we're told that they went out and worked the crowd. We've seen this working of the crowd. I grew up on Westerns like The Virginian, The Big Valley, Bonanza. Anybody that grew up with Westerns or has ever seen a Western, there's this one story that's repeated about 5 or 6 times per season where somebody, one of the heroes, either Nick Barkley or Little Joe or Hoss, they're accused of murder. They're innocent, but they're accused. And then this crowd gets together and they go over to the sheriff's office where the jail is. And they start shouting, "Sheriff, you sent him out here. We ain't waiting for that circuit judge. We want to hang him now. Pete was a friend of mine. Wasn't he a friend of yours?" And they're like, "Oh, yeah." Oh. That's what crowds do. We see it in the Westerns. That's actually what happened to Jesus. They worked the crowd. My friends, the majority is usually wrong. Throughout history, the majority has been wrong far more than it has been right. There was a time when the majority of people thought slavery was okay. Even the majority of the people who originally colonized America, they thought slavery was okay. The great civilizations, the Greeks, the Romans, thought slavery was okay. In many places in the Middle East, they continue to have slavery today. And there are slave labor camps in China and North Korea. But for the most part, in our Western world, we're very much used to the idea that slavery is evil. There was a time when the abolitionists speaking out were the few and the brave. It is human nature to follow the crowd, not God, and it is human nature to sin, and therefore it is human nature to reject even the offer of our sin being forgiven if the crowd is teaching us something politically correct or woke or different. And that is why more people will end up in hell than heaven. This is Bob Siegel with a lot of help from the Bible, making the obvious obvious.
Thank you.
is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
The sequel to The Dangerous Christmas Ornament is called Inside the Castle in the Glass, and already this entertaining sequel is getting great reviews from customers on Amazon.com. Reviews such as this one. Very clever way of introducing certain life principles in a fictional setting. I thoroughly enjoyed the story. Here's another review. I picked up this book at a book signing with Bob Siegel on a Friday. By Monday morning before work, I finished it. This is over 500 pages of story. I couldn't put it down. I would plan to put it down at the end of the chapter, then something big would take place. I would have to continue to see what happened. A lot of unexpected twists and turns and a lot of things you can't imagine. Things that make you say, what? By the way, I am pushing 60 years old and I enjoyed this book and look forward to more of Bob's books. Keep them coming. Inside the Castle in the Glass, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Well, you've all heard the news by now, unless you've been hibernating. Even the mainstream media can't ignore this one. Oh, they'd love to, but even they can't. I'm referring, of course, to the classified documents found in the garage of one of President Biden's Delaware homes. These are Obama-era classified documents. They've also been found in a place called Biden's Think Tank. The idea of Biden having a place to think. Well, we just won't even go there today. But anyway, naturally, my friends, this is all priceless revelation. After the Biden administration's so-called Justice Department raids Trump's home in Florida, after Biden himself commenting on Trump's documents in Mar-a-Lago, talking about the dangers of exposing sources and referring to President Trump as irresponsible. Yes, our current president refers to our former president as irresponsible. So now, when classified documents are found on Biden's property, not documents that he declassified as president, but rather documents from the Obama administration when Biden was vice president, what's he doing with these things? Oh, we are left with a double standard for the history books, unless history is written by Joy Behar of The View. If you like Joe Biden, if you think he's been doing a crackerjack job as president, if you're afraid of becoming disillusioned because your hero might be falling from a pedestal, if you're worried about any kind of criminal negligence on the part of Joe Biden, be of good cheer. Behar has gone on television and explained to the country why it was correct to be concerned when this happened to Trump, but incorrect to be concerned that it is happening to Biden.
I think that what you just said is right, that there are differences in what happened.
Yes, but you know, also not good.
Well, we all know that Trump is a liar and a thief, you know? We know that. So it's not that big a jump to say that he obstructed and he lied. We don't think that Biden is a liar and a thief, so we give him the benefit of the doubt. That's partly what's going on.
Well, there you have it. The reason documents on Trump's property were a problem and documents on Biden's property are not a problem is that Trump is lying and Biden is not. End of story. Well, I guess we cleared that one up. And what is the evidence, you ask? No. Aren't you paying attention? She gave evidence. In fact, she gave more than evidence. She offered proof. Actual proof. She didn't refer to what everybody thinks. She referred to what everybody knows. She said everybody knows Trump is a liar. She didn't tell us anything by way of example or prove it, but it doesn't matter. If you already know it, you already know it. We know Trump is a liar. And as for Biden, well, Biden has a reputation for telling the truth. So we give him the benefit of the doubt. Got that? My friend, are you following this? Are you taking notes? Even if you're driving, it's raining anyway. Maybe you should pull over. It would be safer anyway. And get out your notepad or your iPhone and take some notes, because this is precious stuff. This is history making. Biden is not a liar. And we believe that because, well, because we believe that. This woman shouldn't be on The View. She should be teaching logic at a law school. Yes, Joe's record for truth-telling is solid as gold. Biden has never, ever lied. How could he? He's been too busy to lie. I mean, he's been working hard. It takes a lot of hard work and time to report that our economy is in top shape, and to report that there is no border crisis, and to report that the Afghanistan withdrawal was handled successfully. Those are Biden's assessments on all of those things. And he never had time to lie before he became president either. He was too busy threatening to withhold funds to Ukrainian officials if they didn't stop investigating his son Hunter. And he was too busy denying that he and Hunter ever discussed Hunter's foreign business dealings. And even before he became vice president, when, oh when, would he have lied? There was no time to lie when he was arrested in South Africa after trying to visit Nelson Mandela in prison. Well, actually, the Washington Post checked that box as a lie, and they're no conservative rag. The Washington Post is about as leftist as the rest of the mainstream media, and even they said he was lying. Well, never mind. On this particular occasion, the Washington Post must have been mistaken because they weren't paying attention to Biden's stellar record from the past, such as graduating at the top of his class at Syracuse Law School in 1968. Oh, wait, actually, he graduated 76th. But hey, in some alternate quantum reality, maybe 76th is top of the class. Well, never mind all that. After all, he explains himself eloquently. He's always been a top-notch public speaker. Remember those first-rate dynamic campaign speeches he gave back in 1988 during an early bid for President of the United States? Everybody remembers them. They remember them well. As a matter of fact, we remembered them before Biden even gave them. And as much as he was plagiarizing John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and others, well, at least he stole from the best. Come on, man, give me a break. Okay, I could mention other things. There's a list. But we'll mercifully switch gears. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Hello, Bob. Well, that was a passionate, passionate monologue, right?
Well, somebody's got to say it.
I know.
If you can't do it on talk radio, where can you do it?
Right, right. And our fellow President Biden, I heard, actually responded to the whole situation. Should we take a listen?
I saw a bit of that interview. Go ahead. Let's roll it.
Classified material next to your Corvette. What were you thinking?
I'm going to get a chance to speak on all this, God willing, soon. But as I said earlier this week, people, and by the way, my Corvette's in a locked garage. Okay, so it's not like you're sitting out in the street.
It was in a locked garage.
Yes, as well as my Corvette. As I said earlier this week, people know I take classified documents and classified material seriously.
Do you get that? He's taking it very seriously.
You can't make this stuff up. If you wrote it for a screenplay, nobody would believe it. I take it very seriously, classified information. We can see where at the moment it may not look that way, but hey, you're talking to me now.
Oh, and by the way, just so everyone notices, he didn't park his Corvette in the street. He got it in his garage. So I was like, what happened to his Corvette in the meantime? Yeah. Oh my goodness.
It doesn't matter if it's inside the garage, as long as the garage is locked in with the Corvette. that. Of course, Mar-a-Lago, it was locked up there too. Those were documents Trump had as president. He claims he declassified them. This is pretty interesting stuff.
And do you see what the Democrats are trying to do in order to respond to this whole situation, and it's going to just completely waste our time? Did you hear what's going on with DeSantis here as of late?
Oh, they're trying to switch it, and they're making another one of the Ron DeSantis accusations, right?
Uh-huh.
They call that the bait and switch.
Exactly. In this case, it's campaign funding. And if he is found guilty, he can get kicked out of Congress. But we both know, you and I both know, because we're logical people here, is anything going to come out of this whole investigation?
Of course not. And they say they've appointed a special counsel. I remember even back when we were doing the Mueller investigation, even on Fox News, which was a little more friendly disposed toward Trump, at least at that time, I remember when they appointed the special counsel, one of the women on the, I guess it's their version of The View, is called Outnumbered.
It was The Five.
Well,
right?
There's one called The Five, too. Okay. This is
Outnumbered.
Yeah, this is a bunch of women with one man in the middle, and it's kind of like The View, but there's a little bit of intelligence on it, and something like, but still, that doesn't mean I agree with everything they say. And one of the ladies, when they heard about the special counsel, she says, oh, well, at least we'll know now. Now we'll know the truth. And I'm sitting thinking, we're not going to know any. Everybody's going, well, Mueller's a Republican. I'm going, dude, you know how the deep state works within Democrats and Republicans? Mm-hmm. We knew what that investigation was going to. Of course, they never found anything, but they harassed Trump for the longest time.
Yeah, it's so sad that I can count more than my fingers and my toes combined of how many rhinos we have in Congress or anywhere in the government right now. So it's hard to trust any politician at this point.
I wish we had dinos, Democrats in name only, but unfortunately...
hard to find those.
The Democrats are true blue Democrats, but with the Republicans, they make all these great promises and then they get into office and they don't do jack. There are exceptions such as Jim Jordan, and we are going to see a lot of things come to light. It's going to be fun to watch the things they expose about Hunter, about Afghanistan, about the border, so many things. Now, it'll come out in the light. What's going to happen to any of the people? Nothing.
Nothing. No.
The Biden administration isn't going to do that. Even when it was Trump's Justice Department. The Justice Department really belonged to the former Obama administration, and they didn't have Trump's back. So if they wouldn't support Trump, they're sure not going to go ahead and arrest somebody when they're being directed by the Biden administration. Like I said, you wouldn't believe this stuff if you were watching it in a James Bond movie.
It's very true. Very true. Let's go ahead and move on to some of the stories that I have here.
Yeah, there are a few other things going on in the country, and unfortunately in the state of California.
Right. So we'll start actually here in San Diego to start things off. San Diego's Water Conservation Group has announced that we are at 130% over our drought levels due to how much rain we have been having. Over this weekend, we are supposed to have a total of 3 inches of rain. So if you are in a very safe area, then thank goodness. If you're not, because I have quite a few people that I know that are actually in flood warning areas, and they have to have flood insurance and everything here. So our prayers go out to
them. It's going on. I got into the studio a little late, and I had to say to Brendan, sorry, I got my boat and rode over here as fast as I could. I love the rain. I don't particularly care to drive in it, but I love that we're getting all this rain. But you're right. It really depends on where you live. I remember once years ago having a leaky roof. The rain was not nearly as fun that evening.
No. Plus, we're in an arid area, I would say. So none of the water is really soaking up too much very well. But whatever areas are soaking it up, oh man, the greenery is so beautiful to look at.
I like to walk out at Santee Lakes, beautiful lakes, but they never had green hills before.
Yeah.
I got out of my car and I'm looking at these hills. They look like Switzerland, and this is Santee Lakes, for Pete's sakes.
I know. So on the one hand, there is some scariness to this, but on the other, you know, it does equal out to something really beautiful to look at. So again, be very careful out there in the rain, everybody. Moving on, I want to talk about the homeless issue going on in San Diego. It was just announced.
That can't be much fun in the rain.
No, not at all. It is just announced that homelessness has actually gotten worse here in San Diego. Let's look at a couple of these stats. Homeless deaths were 574, which is a 7% increase compared to last year, which was 536. And in 2020, it was only 357, so a lot lower then. There's also, this year, it's been reported that there's 1,700 homeless people that have been reported here in San Diego, which is up from 2021, which was just 1,100 people. Now, I put this blame on a little bit of mixed factors. But here's a representative of San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria's office stating the following here. Since day one, Mayor Gloria has been unwavering on his focus to get people off the street. I don't believe it for a millisecond, because his very first promise as mayor was to help with the homelessness issue, and it has actually gotten worse ever since he became mayor. Kevin Faulkner did a pretty decent job, I would say, in terms of taking care of the homeless.
Well, maybe he can pull a Biden and explain to us how actually it's gotten better since he became mayor.
Well, they're trying to make excuses here later on, the representative here. This has included opening new homeless shelters, increasing the availability of homeless beds by 40%, and creating more places for people to go who are living in their cars. While the city is successfully getting people off the street and into permanent housing every day, I don't know about that. The fact remains that the more people are falling into homelessness than the region's homelessness response system can serve. This is what they're saying here. As the Regional Task Force on Homelessness recently reported, for every 10 people we house in the county, 13 fall into homelessness due to the sky-high housing costs. The mayor also intends to make an announcement about policies to address this in the coming days. He remains committed to the ultimate goal and ends homelessness, a roof over every San Diegan head at any price that they can afford. Personally, I think this is an issue that Todd should have fixed a long time ago, because he's been our mayor for 2 years now. I think we're coming into year three this year, and it's been a shame to have him as a mayor so far. He's been pretty much hurting San Diego.
I don't suppose people want to consider the fact that people who are leaving California in droves because of these draconian policies are no longer paying property taxes or stimulating the economy. So the cost goes up, the cost of houses go up, and it does become harder. I don't suppose that could ever have anything to do with it.
No, of course not. And another thing too, is there's been a huge increase also, like you said, in living in cars too, which is somehow so much more affordable.
Well, that won't last too much longer in California. They're going to outlaw cars.
I know.
Oh, actually, a car that's just parked that you can't drive anywhere, that would probably be okay with King Newsom.
Probably. So speaking of our royal King Newsom.
His royal majesty.
Nuisance Newsom, as I like to call him personally. He has come out with a lot of brand new laws here. And
I read some of them, but I want to get
your reaction.
I would have been too
depressed
to read all of them, but I'll let you go ahead. Let us have it. So they are pretty depressing.
I'm going to start off with some easy ones here, and then we'll get into the more serious ones here shortly. So we have four new state holidays now. The Lunar New Year, the Genocide Remembrance Day on April 24th, Juneteenth, and Native American Day on September 22nd.
Wait, so Genocide Remembrance Day, I take it that's this belief that we committed genocide against Native Americans?
That's correct, yeah.
That is simply not true. Don't get me wrong. Our country doesn't have a lot to brag about in the way they handled Native Americans, but there was no systematic act. Genocide suggested somebody systematically sat down and said, we're going to wipe everybody out. There's a claim that Columbus did that. That is simply not true. It is true that Columbus's people brought over diseases from Europe, and that wiped a lot of them out. But Brendan, there's so much historical revision. But look, we did not treat the Native Americans very well as a country. That part is true. But as always, sometimes you hear these extreme things and the truth is found somewhere in between.
I completely understand. Along with these other things too, like Juneteenth becoming a holiday, Santee School District has already viewed it as a holiday as well a couple of years ago. So this is just a way for the whole state itself, not just specific spots, to go along with all these different holidays. Personally, I do take these holidays sort of seriously here, whether it be Veterans Day. I actually do celebrate all our
Veterans. Oh, you mean you take valid holidays that were created for valid reasons?
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Honoring veterans, Memorial Day.
Yes, exactly.
President's Day, it's like it meant more when it was Washington's birthday.
I was going to say, I wish Washington.
President's Day, every president now, Biden, Carter, that's like giving every president a trophy. Everybody that's ever been president gets a participation trophy. That's what President's Day,
whether good or bad,
whether good or bad. But when they were honoring a couple of good presidents, Washington and Lincoln, it was very meaningful.
So moving on to another law, jaywalking is no longer a crime.
Oh, I heard that one. Yeah.
So this is just a nitpick. I don't mind if jaywalking's not a crime, but still, look left and right. Stop doing this. I'm the pedestrian, so I get the right of way no matter what. Look right or left first before you start crossing any.
Well, and yesterday I was driving around a lot and I was in the rain and I was telling my wife at home, there were four different times where people were just jaywalking. Now, would I want to see somebody who's jaywalking thrown in jail?
No.
So if they don't want to make that a crime, that's fine. But then if somebody who's driving along and somebody runs in front of their car, okay, the guy driving the car should be careful too. But there's a little bit of culpability on both sides if they're not using a crosswalk.
Totally.
Somebody hits somebody and kills them, or even just hits them and gets sued. Their life has changed the rest of their lives. But still, okay, do I want to see a jaywalker in jail? No, but neither do I want to see parents who go to PTA meetings and say they have a right to talk about their kids' education put on our terrorist watch list. least. Yeah. So let's have a little perspective about what we're calling a crime and what we're not calling a crime.
Exactly. And for those of you driving now with pedestrians in the way, I'm going to say now it's time to invest into a dash cam now at this point. Because trust me, they're going to quickly come at you and say it's your
fault. Some people may want to jump in front of a car so that they can throw a lawsuit on the person and be set for life. Right. I mean, people do these devious things.
Right. Let's go on to the next one. Rap lyrics and other artistic works cannot be used as evidence in criminal proceedings. This one kind of surprises me a bit.
Oh, so like there's a song rapping about killing cops, then you can't mention that if somebody actually killed a cop.
There's two examples on the top of my head. And again, we go to rap lyrics too. There's a rapper named Bobby Shmurda and another rapper by the name of, I'm trying to remember, something Nelly. I think it's MWM Nelly, who had rap songs where they actually bragged about the people that they killed. And they actually used those lyrics as a way of saying, oh, they're confessing to killing these people.
Now,
because they were under criminal investigation when they were making these songs.
So the idea was that the person doing the rap song really did do this killing and brag about it?
Exactly. And they were actually thrown in jail for it. One of them is in a life sentence. The other one is in jail for it.
Have they since confessed whether they really did it or not? Or did they try to get out of it and say, well, we were just artistically playing around?
I think for both of them, they've confessed. And they even used the songs as evidence.
Okay. And so now we're saying that they can't use... So in other words, you can't use a confession as evidence if you put it to music or
something
you rap
like
it.
That, right? Yeah.
And so what happens if you do it to Rodgers and Hammerstein melody? Can you be arrested for that? Is it just rap music that we're protecting?
I shot him. No, of course not.
But now I will say this, because we have to be careful. If on the other hand, somebody went out and killed somebody because some rap person was rapping about killing a cop, which is horrible. It's horrible. But if they were just doing that to make a point and they really didn't do it and somebody else listened and did it, that gets back to the free speech we were talking about last week. I don't believe the artist is culpable. I believe the person that did it is.
No, they actually did these activities here. Then they actually are convicted of this crime, but not anymore, apparently. The other wording is other artistic work. That is very of a vague term, and we've talked about this multiple times, about laws having vague terms.
Yeah, so, other artistic, that can mean anything.
This guy can put it in a poem, or he can write it in a diary, and he can say, oh, I was actually going to use that as a book, so therefore it's an artistic work.
Yeah,
so
what if somebody in a diary is just venting, and then somebody finds it out?
Yep.
And you know, there's a lot of scary things going on the internet. Speaking of this thing, I heard just the other day that there's a new computer program that all you have to do is speak into it and it can completely mimic your voice. Can you imagine somebody taking some well-known voice in radio or even just some friend who's posted something, some blog on the internet?
Totally.
And they want to frame them? They could have them in their own voice. Confessing it or trying to, who knows, hit on a minor or whatever would be an offense. This is pretty dangerous. I think we're going to have to soon pass a law that says we can't use anything that comes from a computer as evidence. We have to have a physical human eyewitness. Otherwise, it can't be a crime. That's our technology getting away from
us. I'm telling you, it's shocking how much technology has actually hurt humanity sometimes in a long run, too. And I'm not one of those people who have the belief system, oh, AI is going to take over the world and blah, blah, blah.
Not be as bad as the Terminator, but it is getting pretty interesting what's happening.
AI will always have the limitations of any human being, because human beings can only program so far with AI.
Perhaps, but somebody exploiting and programming AI could use that to frame somebody. That concerns me. So that wouldn't be the AI itself as the culprit, but a programmer and an exploiter.
Right. Well, going back to your in-person kind of example, that's kind of difficult because there's still so many crimes that happen on the cybernet itself. I mean, I use the term cybernet, so it's so silly, but it's true. I mean, we have so many things that get leaked, classified documents in the government that will get often leaked so many times.
I understand that. I suppose if something got leaked and that brought it to their attention, that's fine, but they've got to find the hard copy. They've got to find the actual documents, and that's why we need to back things up, because it may have been valid at one time to say, okay, this person was on this property and their cam picked them up, and there may have been a time where that was great evidence, but now that they can manipulate their voice, and with CGI they can manipulate and draw the person, there's no limit to what they can do. It's getting very precarious.
Very true, very true. Moving on to one last one, because we're running close to out of time.
We haven't even gotten into too many of Newsom's laws, have we?
I know. I'm trying to get there as best as I can.
My audience is waiting for the bad news here, Brendan.
You want to do one bad news one? Okay.
Well, we might as well get it over with.
Yeah. Let's do the Safer Streets for All Act law. Have you heard about this one?
No, but okay. I don't like the smell of it already.
It's a loitering law. It repeals loitering offenses that advocates that they say they targeted LGBTQ+ people and people of color. And then it says here that critics have argued that this law actually makes it harder for authorities to help prevent vulnerable people from being sex trafficked. And then Newsom had a follow-up to help defend his signing of this bill, saying, to be clear, this bill does not legalize prostitution. It simply revokes provisions of the law that led to disproportionate harassment of women and transgender adults. Black and Latino women are particularly affected by this. I still feel as if I'm not safe with this whole thing because, again, sex trafficking has been a huge issue, especially here in California, or for us here in San Diego, because we're so near the border. And we have had so many different stories every single year, someone getting kidnapped somewhere and being sex trafficked down in Mexico.
Well, also, and I'd have to take a look at the law more specifically, you talk about broad terminology. Loitering is a very broad term. I know there's a lot of issues these days, and this has been going on in LA, where people are camping right on the doorsteps of businesses. In some cases, there's people just living like pigs and defecating, and the city won't do anything about it, and these people are having to leave their businesses. So when they say no street loitering, does that mean that somebody can get out on the street right in front of somebody's front lawn and pitch a tent if they want? I don't know. Maybe they're talking about prostitution as the reason for the bill, but what kind of vague language are they using that somebody could go and apply somewhere?
Okay.
That's just a question because I haven't seen the bill, but that kind of language at least raises that question to me.
Based on what you're saying, I think private property is still protected, but this whole public... public street
situation. But it gets weird, though, because technically, even in the suburbs, you don't own that sidewalk. Even if someone wants to park in front of your house, you don't own that. So what if somebody wants to just go and harass somebody that lives there and they're loitering on the streets and yelling and screaming? There should be some kind of recourse.
And by the way, funny that you mentioned L.A. L.A. and, of course, San Francisco have already accepted this as a city ordinance before it was a state law.
Oh, so they're probably doing cartwheels. Themselves high fives.
And I'm like, well, of course you thought of it. You two cities have been the most polluted cities ever, especially when it comes to homelessness and how disgusting everything is in your infrastructure over there. So, I mean, we've read stories about how there was defecation all over the street, sidewalks, and everything.
But you know what? The powers that be love it because the people that can't stand this leave, which means that's less people that are going to not vote them back into office because anybody that's tolerating this insanity is probably going to vote to put these people back in power again.
Right. Well, unfortunately, we did run out of time, but I will save some more of these state laws coming up next time I come
Yes, there's some that I heard about that limit free speech that concern me even more. But
I'm going to get to those.
And we talked about free speech last week, too, but it'll always be a recurring theme. Okay, well, Brendan, great having you on as always. He's my top-notch, excellent producer. We will see you next week. In the meantime, this is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.